Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
It is clear that the intent of Congress was to make sure that every eligible American had access to those tax credits.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
Fighting for Idaho.
I'm really disgusted at all the hoopla and the noise that has been made because of Tony Dungy's comments.
I'm shocked that you don't see the problem here. I'm truly, utterly shocked.
Get over it.
Fighting for you.
The Bilderberg meetings are not open to the public, are they?
Who cares? It's not going to change nothing. So, Mark, come back to Earth and talk about the top.
Voices, Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning.
How about some common sense?
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow, your chance to win Big and Rich tickets, your chance to see us live. We are at Lionheart Tactical. That is on State Street, right by Merritt. Speaking of Merritt, they're going to be providing us scones from Merritt's Family Restaurant, number one. Number two, we're giving away tickets for Big and Rich, all in celebration of Lionheart Tactical's grand opening. They're going to have store-wide savings until 8 o'clock. We're going to have firearm and safety demonstrations. I don't know how we're going to do that on the radio, but it sounds pretty good. And we're inviting all of our friends who love the Second Amendment to stop by, hang out, and discuss, well, discuss gun safety, discuss Second Amendment future, and so many other issues related to the right to keep and bear arms. That's tomorrow, Lionheart Tactical on State Street, right by Merritt's, right by the tanning place. You can't miss it. Looking forward to hanging out with all of you here at 580 KIDO. We're joined now by political strategist Travis Hawks. Travis, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good to have you with us here at 580 KIDO. Let's talk a little bit about the state of play here post-primary in the Republican Party. How do you see things playing out?
Well, you know, obviously it's been a little more eventful summer than I think we're used to. But, you know, I think all this will get resolved soon and we can get past it. And that will be, you know, that'll be in everyone's best interest. I think it'll be important, you know, to try and unify everyone so that we can focus on winning elections in November.
How was your thoughts on the primary? You know, you have a popular, could-be three-term governor going up against a party challenger. I know the Republican Party, Travis, says they like primaries, but that does add a level of difficulty. What was that like being inside, working for the governor, and being on the trail, if you will?
Yeah, you know, we were able to help the governor on the fundraising side. We weren't really involved on the strategy with the governor, but you know, I do think primaries are good. I think that they can get more people involved and keep people accountable. And you know, I think that the governor had a good plan to go out and execute on the campaign strategy and also conserve, you know, resources for the general election and was able to win. I mean, it can be, you know, these primaries can be bumpy. I mean, I was involved, you know, a lot in the Mike Simpson, Brian Smith primary and that got, you know, pretty ugly at times and those primaries can be bumpy and cause, you know, some hard feelings, to people on each side. But I think what sometimes is missing a little bit for us here in Idaho and where we need to improve is, you know, coming together after those primaries and, you know, having a unified vision to beat Democrats and not lose, you know, the great standing we have in the state of, you know, having every elected constitutional officer and a large majority of the legislature.
Well, I was going to say that's easier said than done. You know, I when feelings are hurt, when people spend money, then all of a sudden saying, you know, such and such is the better person for the good of the party. Is that easier said than done?
You know, I think it definitely can be easier said than done, you know, deep in the trenches because, you know, it can get personal and people invest, you know, invest a lot in it and, you know, both time and money and, you know, part of what makes our process great is that, and the more people involved in caring, I think that's only positive. I think what we don't want is a Republican Party that's on cruise control that nobody cares about or is paying attention to. And so I do think there's more good than bad, but it certainly can, you know, it can be hard, and I've been through that, you know, myself, you know, working on the Romney campaigns. You know, you come out of, when we came out of that primary and lost, I mean, it was, you know, it was hard, and I, you know, had some hard feelings towards Governor Huckabee for a while, you know, after that primary and after, you know, some things that
sure.
happened, but you kind of got to get over it and recognize that everyone's, you know, working towards what they think is best.
Travis Hawks with us here, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. What's at stake coming up for both political parties in November?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, what's at stake is really, you know, can the current pattern be maintained or will, you know, the Democrats make some gains? I mean, obviously there's a couple of the constitutional officers that are going to be in play, and it's an opportunity for the Democrats to pick up one of those, and for the Republicans, I think it's difficult maintaining this large majority, and as demographics change and as things change, you know, it's going to become more difficult, which I think is all the more reason for the importance of unity. Because I think that, you know, holding this kind of super majority, you know, if you will, is going to become more difficult over time. And so that's kind of what's at stake is, you know, can the Republicans maintain or increase, you know, their ground or do they give up a little bit in this election?
Well, what is the mood when you talk to folks that, you know, are ready to come together and you have, you know, this show obviously, is a microphone for other folks that say, look, we want people to come to the table. We have our issues. We need folks on the other side to do it. It's almost like there could be three political parties in the state.
Yeah, yeah, and that's something that I think we've got to get corrected. And I think that, you know, for a lot of average, you know, voters that maybe aren't, you know, in the trenches, weren't up at the convention, you know, aren't really involved in the central committees and things like that. I think there's, you know, a certain sense of frustration of, you know, they're ready for this to be off the front page of the paper and ready to, you know, move on. And I think that, you know, I think we're just in an environment, and it's a lot of why, you know, nationally we see an anti, you know, incumbent environment and a frustration with, you know, with politics and the low approval for Congress and those things. I think a lot of that is tied into just the frustration of people, you know, having the sense that, you know, the job isn't getting done, and, you know, they want less fighting and grandstanding and more, you know, accomplishments, more, you know, getting things done and doing the job. And I think that frustration that we kind of see nationally has trickled down a little bit, you know, recently on, you know, for the state, because of those issues. But, all that being said, I think that once we get past it and it's resolved, you know, it'll kind of fall to the side and won't be an issue, when people are voting in November.
How big of a challenge do you think it will be from the Baluchov campaign? I mean, the governor has been involved in politics. He's very well liked. No one will outwork him. His opponents say that. I've seen it on the trail. You've been involved on the trail with him. No one will outwork Governor Otter, but how significant is the challenge from A.J. Baluchov?
Well, I mean, first of all, I always, you know, feel like you've got to take every challenge seriously, and you never take for granted what voters are going to do, because voters, you know, there can always, it's, you don't want to turn a you know, brush fire into a forest fire. And so you've always got to be careful about that. And AJ is you know, well respected in the circles where people know him. That being said, I mean, he does have an uphill challenge to tell his story and let people know who he is and make a case, you know, for why he should be elected over, you know, a governor that's very popular, that, you know, has kept the state on the rails during a terrible recession and now is presiding over some good economic growth and improvement in employment numbers and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of campaign they run. It's certainly an uphill battle for them, and I've been surprised that they've you know, spent time talking about, you know, attacking the NRA and social issues and things like that, because that doesn't seem like the, you know, the message that is going to lead them to victory.
Travis, you've been involved with the politics. How big of an issue will education be? AJ does have a background there. It seems with the addition of Mike Lanza, that's going to be one of the focal points. How big of an issue is that in the campaign?
Well, I think it potentially can be the main issue, because, you know, education is something that really can, you know, transcend, you know, party lines. And, you know, most voters are concerned about education, and we have, you know, a lot of families and big school districts here in the state. And so, you know, obviously I'm sure part of their calculus of winning is convincing the, you know, the young families, the soccer moms, if you will, that normally vote Republican, you know, to switch over based on education. So I think there'll be a lot of talk about it. I think that, you know, Governor Otter has done a good job, in talking about that issue as well, and presenting, you know, some of his own, you know, plans and solutions. And, you know, again, I think it's only positive that, you know, that's a campaign issue, because it is a critical issue for our state and future economic development, and economic growth in our state.
What about the state school superintendent's race? Mr. Luna will not be running for reelection. We have two new candidates. Does that help or hurt the overall ticket that we have somebody new running for the Secretary of State as a Republican there, Sherry Ibarra?
Well, you know, I think that it really can help both sides from a turnout perspective. I mean, I think that the Democrats, you know, definitely feel like they've got a shot to win that, and so that, you know, certainly has the potential to energize their turnout. But on the same side, I think the Republicans, you know, see that and know that that is a possible vulnerability. And so that can increase the turnout for them. So I think both sides would tell you they feel good about, you know, that opportunity. But the reality was, you know, that's been such a heated, contested race for the last couple of cycles anyway. You know, I don't know that it's going to be much different than it's been.
Yeah, it is interesting, though. You have that race, then you have, again, the Secretary of State's race. How do you see that one? Are those the two vulnerable seats because you don't have incumbents on the Republican side?
Yeah, I think anytime you don't have an incumbent, there's added vulnerability, just because, you know, a large part of it is name ID, and that's you know, it's kind of ironic at times that there's, you know, a general anti-incumbent mood, but incumbents, you know, nationally, but most of the incumbents, you know, continue to win. And it's always an uphill battle for a challenger from a name ID perspective. And also you've got to make both a case against the incumbent and the case for yourself. And so it's just a harder threshold. So with these being open seats, it certainly, you know, levels the playing field, and some of those natural advantages of incumbency aren't on the table. And so, you know, those are both seats that, you know, Republicans have got to pay attention to and help get out the vote on and you know, can't take for granted.
How big an issue is money in running campaigns? You know, if money were the only thing, we'd be talking about the election and re-election of President Forbes back in the mid-90s. But how significant is money in today's political world?
Well, I mean, it is, you know, it really depends on the race, you know, and the thing with some of these down-ballot races, you know, that we're talking about, a lot of times there's not substantial money put in those races, and that is part of the challenge, you know, of beating an incumbent or getting name ID out. You know, certainly when you're looking at a, you know, a governor's race and national races, you know, money is important, because money helps you, you know, deliver your message, you know, through mail, through television, you know, through digital, through those things. But as you pointed out, it's certainly not the only thing, and you've got to have a good candidate and the right messaging as well. And we see cases all the time where the less funded candidate you know, wins. And we saw that in Virginia with the Cantor race. And so, you know, if you look at that second congressional district race with Simpson and Smith, because of the outside groups that came in, there ended up being close to $5 million was spent on that race. And so at the end of the day, it was the, you know, the TV stations and the radio stations that really enjoyed that race.
Reminds me of a radio or a TV station at WMUR in Manchester, New Hampshire. They actually have a wing called the Steve Forbes wing because he spent so much money.
Yeah, and you know, I've been out to Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, during primary season, mm-hmm. and Florida and some of these other places, and it's incredible. I mean, it's literally when the TV is on, it is every single commercial, you know, is a political commercial, and it's pretty interesting to see. And yeah, at the end of the day, the people that benefit are those radio station and TV station owners. They love the political season.
Travis, please stand by. More coming up with our friend Travis Hawks. Kevin Miller in the morning at 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work safely.
Hey, Kevin, I got an idea for your show. It would be for keywords like InfoWars, Alex Jones. And then you just hit like this big buzzer, the one people ever start when they lead with, yeah, well, George Bush did, and then they're done. It's your show.
Must hear radio every morning with Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Travis Hawks joining us, talking about, well, his two jobs. Number one, a political analyst, political consultant, a political fundraiser. Before I get to talk to you about college football season and the business of college football, what, you know, can you share some of your experiences of being on the trail? I've lived it at the national level, but for people listening right now, coming in on the connector, what was it like for you to be in Iowa, New Hampshire, Florida, at the epicenter of the political process?
You know, it was it tremendous. You know, being in Iowa for the caucus and just seeing, you know, that whole experience. I mean, I had the opportunity to do some really cool things. I mean, I knocked on doors in New Hampshire and helped get out the vote in those states and saw the retail, you know, politicking that goes on in those places. And, you know, it just was incredible experiences and, you know, had the opportunity to go back to the convention in Tampa and be a delegate, opportunity to ride in the motorcade with Governor Romney, you know, on the campaign, working with the Secret Service and those types of things. I mean, it was just a lot of really amazing opportunities. And I'll tell you, you know, when you're in those places and seeing and talking to voters, you realize that there is kind of two political worlds. I mean, there's this 24/7 news cycle political world, but there are, you know, millions of voters who are dealing with real problems and real issues that want to cut through that noise and try and do what's best for their own family. And so, you know, there's parts of the political process that make you kind of lose faith in the process and in America, but that's a part that restores your faith in America and the voters. It's awesome.
You know, the next time we have you on, we'll have to ask you about the political freak show when you kind of bump into Bill Kristol and he's just like, here's a guy you see on network TV and he's just an ordinary person until the lights come on. But I have to get back to something else. College football season starting. You've got the Blue and Orange Stores, nationally recognized a few years ago for figuring out just how viable the Broncos would be, mentioned in Sports Illustrated. Are you surprised at the businessification? I know it's not a word, but the businessification of college football?
You know, I don't think I'm surprised by it. You know, I think it's just kind of a train that can't be stopped at this point. And I think that with the value of the media rights and the value of live sporting events, you know, it's going to get, you know, it's only going to get more that way. So, you know, it's certainly a evolving and changing process. It's worth a lot of money to these TV networks and to the colleges themselves and to folks like Nike. And, you know, I just don't know how it could have been avoided because of the sheer dollars that are coming in the door, you know, through that ecosystem.
When you bring in folks to the Blue and Orange store, former players and players, and you see the reaction of the fans, there's an innocence that maybe it could be lost again with the bigger and bigger business model of college football.
Yeah, I think that's a danger, and I think that's not even just in college sports. I mean, I think even with the NFL and some of the things they're doing, I mean, it's, you know, you got to be careful not to kill the golden goose and you know, kind of, you know, ultimately kind of, you know, disenchant or disenfranchise people because, you know, the business aspect becomes, you know, so much more than, you know, than the love of the game and the excitement of the game. But, you know, the sports are popular. I mean, college football is extremely popular nationally. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how things play out. I mean, obviously one issue that everyone's dealing with right now is attendance and can you, you know, can you motivate people to go to the games where they may not have good cell service or Wi-Fi and they can't post on Instagram and their choice is to sit home and watch a 60-inch flat screen with surround sound and eat and drink whatever they want and watch multiple games at once. And so, you know, there's as much money as coming in, there's definitely challenges, you know, ahead as well.
How do you see the season for the Broncos?
You know, I think the season is going to be good. You know, I like Coach Harsin a lot. That was obviously a great hire. And, you know, the energy that the new coaching staff, you know, has brought, I think everyone can feel that. And so I think we're in good shape that way. And ultimately, the majority of our hardest games this year are at home. And so that should bode well for us. So I'm optimistic we'll have a really good season this year.
Well, from a marketing perspective, Travis, this will be the last question. It's good to see that they're back on national television with the big game against Ole Miss. Big for us here, but from a marketing perception, to get one of those big games, usually you have to be from one of the power conferences. So to get that attention, win or lose, the Broncos are still winning on that front.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that brand, you know, has been built through, you know, a lot of exciting games and high-scoring games and then really, you know, taken to another level, obviously, with that first Fiesta Bowl. So it's a great opportunity. I mean, yeah, Boise State playing in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game, you know, here for the second time when that game has, you know, traditionally been, you know, SEC and ACC teams, you know, it's a great opportunity and people nationwide, I mean, we all have stories of wearing our Boise State gear, you know, in other parts of the country and people immediately, you know, are drawn to that, want to talk about the blue turf and the Oklahoma game and the offense and those types of things. And so that's, it's a very valuable brand that has done great things for the university, but also for our city and state. You know, from a recognizable standpoint.
Travis, thank you for your time. We'd love to have you back.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, Travis Hawks with us. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO.
Israel released video of an airstrike on the Al-Wafa Rehabilitation Hospital in Gaza, a site they say Hamas used to store rockets.
This use of human shields is extraordinarily cynical. It's grotesque. It's inhuman.
There's something wrong with the world today.
I can hear artillery fire in the distance.
We need to find a way forward that works, and it's not violence.
We're seeing things in a different way.
We are doing our best to defend the state of Israel.
If Vladimir Putin received the message, he didn't much care because two more jets were shut down today.
We're living on the edge.
Making sense of a senseless world. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. Don't forget tomorrow, Lionheart Tactical celebrating their grand opening. We're going to talk Second Amendment. We're going to be talking guns. We're going to be talking to you. Stop by, free scones from Merritt's Family Restaurant. You want to know where it is? Right by Merritt's. You know Merritt's been there forever. why not stop by? We're going to talk about guns. I've invited everybody, and hopefully Greg Pruitt's going to make it. I got to get with Tony and Alex and Ryan and everybody else. Right now, I think we have, what do we have, three RSVPs? We have Tea Party Bob, Liberal Steve, and Two Fly Bri. By the way, even if you can't stay for all of the broadcast, stop in and register to win. I have them right here. Tickets to see Big and Rich for their show at the Idaho Center coming up very, very soon in September. Hey, do you think that the White House really understands the letter of the law? Jonathan Carl went back and forth with Josh Earnest. Let's take a listen.
Okay, John.
Josh, back to the D.C. Circuit Court opinion. I understand you believe you'll win on appeal. But if this opinion is upheld, does it effectively gut Obamacare by eliminating up to 5 million subsidies?
Well, John, as you point out, there are millions of Americans across the country who do benefit in a very important way from the Affordable Care Act. Millions of Americans are eligible for tax credits that make their health insurance more affordable for them. That is one of the hallmark achievements of the Affordable Care Act. And it is clear that the intent of Congress was to make sure that every eligible American had access to those tax credits, whether or not their marketplace was operated by federal officials or by local state officials. So we feel very confident in the legal case that we'll make before the court, and the Department of Justice will be responsible for pressing that argument, and we feel confident in the argument they'll be making.
Okay, but that didn't answer my question. I said, if this decision is upheld, and you were just slapped.
That didn't answer my question. Does the White House obey the letter of the law?
Pressing that argument, and we feel confident in the argument they'll be making.
Okay, but that didn't answer my question. I said, if this decision is upheld, and you were just slapped down by a circuit court, if this decision is upheld, does it effectively gut Obamacare? It means, for instance, that the president can no longer say that people can have access to health care for the price of a cell phone bill. I mean, this would wipe away 4.7 million right now, 4.7 million people's subsidies.
Well, you and I agree with the fact that there are millions of Americans that currently benefit from this provision of the law, and we are confident that that law...
That's a good point. Hey, your health care is going to... I can't even do a goofy voice. At 580KIDO, your health care is going to cost you less than your cell phone. If you like your doctor... you can keep him. If you like your plan, you can keep it. Now, what's the big deal? Why are we picking on the president?
Go enjoy your beer and ride your ATV and watch sports. We'll run the country.
And that's really the motto of the Obama administration. And this is where, and maybe it's on us. I was about ready to bash the press on this, for not harping on this and leading the charge. But if we can't have the charge ourselves, if we can't lead the charge ourselves, then who are we really to blame? I mean, do we blame ourselves? Do we sit back and say to ourselves, well, we're getting hosed, not much we can do about it. There's beer in the fridge. But I know my medical care costs more. I know there are a lot of people that are suffering because of Obamacare. So there's one lie. It's going to cost less than your cell phone. You get to keep your doctor. You get to keep your plan. Lies, lies, lies. Lies. And we just kind of sit back and go, well, you know, it's okay. You take a look at what's going on with the IRS. Big hearings yesterday. We'll talk about it. By the way, coming up next, the governor says no to the illegals at the border. And this is where it gets scary. This is not partisan. Let me repeat this. This is not partisan. No public health agency is monitoring the spread of disease along the border as thousands of unaccompanied Central American minors keep pouring across the border. Albert Spratt with the National Border Patrol Council says he's seen immigrants with chickenpox, scabies, staph infections, and worse.
This was a little 4 or 5 year old boy laying on his mother's lap. It looks like he's about to die.
If you're sick here but you're not showing it, what are you taking north?
Exactly. No public health agency is monitoring what's coming in. Andrew in Meridian with Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO. Good morning, Andrew.
Well, you know, the healthcare thing's been the topic of conversation the last couple of days because of these court decisions. But the thing that's always befuddled me about, and I heard a guy on another radio show yesterday say this. Well, you know, I pay $1,200 a month for health insurance, and my deductible is $8,500. You know, we just never actually ever use it. We never hit that deductible. We never pay it. And so I hear this a lot. I ran into this when we stopped using our company to provide insurance, you know, 20 years ago. $900 a month and with a huge deductible. And I don't go to the doctor that much. And almost none of these people who have these problems, we live in such fear that we're willing to pay $1,200 a month and never actually use our insurance policy and pay out of pocket for all our doctor costs anyway.
Right.
And still pay the $1,200 a month. You know what that makes us? Bad at math. Because if you're going to pay $1,200 a month for something you're never going to use, put the freaking money in the bank. And then when you have a medical emergency and you have $25,000 or $35,000 sitting there, instead of paying it to the insurance company, who cares what premiums are? Who cares what deductibles are? Stop playing their game. That's the whole thing. We give these people the power over us. We wouldn't care what the Affordable Care Act said, which is not about affordability or care. That's the biggest lie of that whole act. If we didn't give them all of our money every month, stop playing their game. Save your money. Put it in the bank. When you have to go to the doctor or to the hospital, pay them cash. In fact, you'll get a discount. I do all the time. I go to the dentist and say, listen, I don't have insurance. I pay cash for it. Oh, here's a 15% discount. I go to the doctor all the time. I don't have insurance. I just pay the cash today. Oh, 20% discount. They don't want to deal with the insurance companies either.
Great point, Andrew. Thank you for the call. Let's get you to work safe.
The Treasure Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller. KIDOAM.com. 580 KIDO. Idaho's place to talk.
You can hear the 580 KIDO. You ever been in an argument with somebody? Maybe it's at work, maybe it's at home, and they give you the fact check. I got to tell you that it happens sometimes. And then you kind of just, you know what I'm saying. You kind of get through it. Well, if you've ever been to Vegas, we've all been to Vegas. Well, I mean, some of us have been to Vegas. I've been to the Bundy Ranch. And while I was there, I was watching this TV show, The Ralston Report. You ever seen it? Well, anyway, this guy, Ralston, had a chance to talk with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You know her from all the TV shows. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz is really good with the talking points. Well, Mr. Ralston decided to give her a fact check. Let's take a listen.
I think most Americans looking at this, though, Congresswoman, say this law, it's shaky. It's a mess. You are one of the strongest supporters of this law. You have to be worried.
Actually, I think ultimately when the Supreme Court decides this, because obviously with dueling rulings and competing rulings, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be very clear that the unanimous ruling by the Fourth Circuit is the right one. The reason it's the right one is just take a state like Nevada, where you have a governor who refused to implement a state exchange. And as a result, people who get Affordable Care Act health care plans are getting them on the federal exchange.
You know, Congress. That's not your fault. Hey, let me just stop you a second because you were misinformed about that. Brian Sandoval put in a state exchange. He did. So whoever briefed you on that is wrong. He did put in a state exchange. He was the first Republican governor to do that.
Okay. That's not even the
I
point.
I figured you could pivot from that quickly.
That's fine. That's not even the point I'm making.
Okay.
Well, I stand corrected. I'm not from Nevada.
No,
so,
I know. That's why I'm saying that's not your fault.
If you're not from Nevada, then don't talk like you are, that you know it. Just say, I don't know. I don't know, but it happens. And, you know, it's just not in politics. Happens everywhere. You know, how many times do you just kind of flow off at the drop of a hat, if you will, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's always somebody that's got to get you, right? I see. Coming up next hour, we'll talk to best-selling author and international expert Jonathan Wolstetter on the latest in the Middle East, and should we be concerned of the impact it's having on us? Plus, we'll take a listen as Breitbart's Darby tells us about multiple shootings that are common occurrences on the border. It's happening all the time. And, oh, by the way, if you think those Texas National Guard folks are going to ride to the rescue like the Texas Rangers, they will in about 45 days. Details on those stories and more coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. First, let's take a look. 7:59 coming up next. Fox News on the radio with Kay Milley after that. Keep it here. Stay informed. Good morning. Serving Emma.